You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 550 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined by Mr. Seth Miller today. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm all right. Foz is gallivanting around Dubai, so he gets to skip this one.
Man, I listen, you got to get miles, right?
Hey, he's very, very close. He said he actually texted me the other day and was like, I think I'm already getting the global services treatment. Like he was in Polaris and like someone came up and like was like talking to him about like they picked him out of the lounge.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he said he got pre-congratulated.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that's interesting.
Well, you know, also we're in the seat. We're off season. We're getting very quickly into off season. I could very much believe that the agents are just bored.
They're like, I need to walk around and do something. Who can I greet?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it also sort of, though, like, even if it is just an agent who's bored and wants to find someone to greet, like, sort of tell you how much data they have and what they can figure out about people.
Yeah, and how that data is shared between, you know, the lounge and the front desk. And
yeah, so they're going to, you know, a flag on his file anytime he goes in somewhere, or mine, or yours, or any, you know.
Yep.
There's more to it than just you have this elite status. Congratulations, for sure. We know that, but like, just how much and where and how is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's definitely, it'll be fun for Foz to see how it plays out as he utilizes it. So,
yeah.
Sad news, I guess. Sad. I don't know. Disappointing news. Spirit is collapsing for the second time.
Oh, come on now. They filed for protection under the Chapter 11 of the United States Bankruptcy Code.
Yeah. But do you think that helps them?
So the question is, is this Chapter 22 or is this Chapter 18? Right.
Yep.
Chapter 11 allows them to reorganize and keep things going and keep things more to the point, mostly to the point, keep things moving. Vendors are not allowed to break contracts. And it's an interesting thing. All new transactions as of the date of the filing are more or less guaranteed, but prior transactions are not. So the prior transactions all go into the claims, either secured or unsecured, of the hearings. So it's an interesting quirk of how the sort of the rules work. But anyway, yes, there is a lot of questioning. We talked last week about this being, you know, very quickly a going concern after the original filing and whatnot. Obviously, they decided to make things a little more serious and take the protections of the courts. There's a few interesting things in some of the filings that came out of it. Among them, the executives. C-suite executives get $6 million in retention bonuses, which is one of those obnoxious, annoying things that always happens in these cases. And arguably, it's better to, you know, not have the CEO just be like, all right, peace, and walk away. I'm not sure it's worth $3 million, considering the guy's only been there for a couple months, but sure.
Yeah.
The claim is different in a few ways from the October or November 2024 filing, in that this is not a prepackaged bankruptcy. They did not go into it with agreements from suppliers to provide, you know, debtor in possession numbers. They didn't go into it with someone saying, yeah, we've got your money. We'll provide you the funding to get you through this in exchange for ownership.
Yep.
Which is interesting. Also not entirely surprising, because the last guys that did that gave up like $1 billion or $900 million in debt for equity that has just been wiped out. So oopsie. And like, it's one of the interesting things over the last couple of weeks, a lot of the debt has been, you know, it was issued as convertible shares, basically, and all of it converted in the last month or so, or a lot of it converted in the last month or so as they sort of came out of the bankruptcy. And now they're like, oopsie, back into it. So that's also amusing to me and not great. What were some of the other bits that are, leases.
Yeah, we talked about that last show, that they had a bunch of, almost all their fleet is leased.
Yeah, very little unencumbered, which even owned can be encumbered as, you know, used to secure debt. Oh, that's the other thing. They fully withdrew. We talked about this last week. They fully withdrew their revolver, $275 million line of credit.
Yep.
To give it to the credit card, or so they had enough cash to keep their credit card agreement running. And then like a day later declared bankruptcy, which has got to suck to be the bank. Like, oh yeah, we promised them a loan and they'll take it, but you know, whatever, whatever. And then it's like, yep, oops. Yeah, maybe we'll get it back, and it's like a day later. No, you go into the debt pool, and maybe like in some of it back, but you're in with everybody else now. You know, lining up for who has what secured debt versus unsecured debt, and all those things. So, also not great there. But the leases are interesting. Last summer, Spirit had contracts for 36 320, 321 Neo planes deliveries in 27 and 28. They transferred those delivery slots to ALC, which is one of the big leasing companies, but basically setting it up that ALC would hold the delivery slots, but they were assigned to Spirit as airplanes, and Spirit would make some slash most of the pre-delivery payments still and be on the hook for that. And, or maybe they weren't going to do that part, but they would get the planes later and, you know, they would pay it off as part of the lease when they actually took delivery. And now there is some debate between ALC and Spirit over what the actual situation is vis-a-vis those leases and who owes whom how much money and when and where and how. And so part of that is, I'm seeing if I can find this document here. I had it open earlier. Spirit or ALC is basically saying Spirit is in default on the terms of their agreement and owes $2 million per plane as like a buyout and doesn't get to keep their delivery slots, if I'm reading this correctly. So that's not great. And then separately, there's also mention of existing leased aircrafts, which are also believed, at least by the ALC side of things, to be in default. Here, I found this, the document here. I want to read this because it is useful. As previously disclosed, on July 30th, 2024, Spirit Airlines entered into a direct lease transaction with certain affiliates of AerCap, not ALC, for 36 aircraft scheduled for delivery between 2027 and 2028, which were originally part of the order book for Spirit Airlines. Under the terms, AerCap agreed to assume the delivery positions for the leased aircraft and related pre-delivery payment obligations. And AerCap also agreed to lease each aircraft to Spirit Airlines upon delivery by Airbus pursuant to specific lease agreements. On August 25th, 2025, so this was last week before the bankruptcy was declared, Spirit received a written notification from, am I reading the lessor? Yeah, from AerCap, asserting that certain events of default under the undelivered aircraft leases had occurred and were continuing, and that the lessor was terminating the leases. Under each lease, in the event of a termination that occurs prior to the delivery date, the lease termination fee of $2.1 million becomes immediately due and payable. Blah, 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 blah.
So they owe basically $2 million for every lease that they cancel before it's delivered.
And in this case, they're saying that, or AerCap is saying, you have violated the lease, and Spirit is saying, we have not violated the terms yet. I mean, not yet. They just say we haven't violated the terms, so they're disputing it. But, quote, no assurance can be given that parties will reach an amicable resolution on a timely basis, on favorable terms, or at all, end quote.
Does this go to court then to sort this
actually,
out?
I mean, they'll try to negotiate it, but it could go to court. The other one, though, the existing leases is really interesting. On the same date, the 25th, the company received an additional written notice from the lessor with respect to 37 existing lease agreements with certain affiliates of AerCap, going back several years, asserting that the events of default had occurred and were continuing under the existing lease agreements. At this time, the lessor has not accelerated or demanded any payment, not foreclosed on any part of any lien or security interest created by any of the existing leases, and not exercised any other rights or remedies. But they've indicated that they potentially could. So, you know, right at the end of the day, the statement put out by the company is, we're going to shrink more, we're going to cut harder, we're going to, you know, try to cut to profitability. So not getting those 36 planes, maybe not an issue. At the same time, probably, you know, not having to pay to get out of the, you know, pay $70 million to get out of it would be cool for them. Losing some of the existing planes might not even be an issue if they really want to cut, but you'd like to do that in a favorable way. And I would assume, you know, Spirit would want credit or, you know, value from cutting those leases as opposed to the lessor getting the value of sending them on to new airlines. So anyway.
Yeah. I mean, my question for you is, can they actually shrink to profitability?
Probably not. Because, I mean, right, that is one of those things that airlines almost never do. And especially in this case, and you go back to the Scott Kirby comments of, you know, the past couple years in the ULCC market, they only can show good numbers, and I'll use, you know, put good in air quotes there, through unsustainable growth. that their number, right? His argument is that everything looks good as long as you're constantly growing. The minute you've got to steady things out and or shrink, you know, it's a house of cards that collapses. I don't know that it's necessarily quite that bad, but I do, you know, okay, can they shed these 30, the new 36 aircraft they walk away from? Do they get rid of 37 others, right? How much of their fleet do they shrink, especially when they don't really own all of it? So the value proposition there isn't necessarily cash in hand as opposed to just lower expenses. You've got to deal with staffing, crew, whatever, getting rid of a whole bunch of people. That's, you save money over time, but it's not free immediately. And, you know, there's, it's just a lot of different things going on there. And at the end of the day, you've still got to convince passengers to fly with you.
Well, and I think that, like, being in a second bankruptcy is going to make passengers very leery.
I wouldn't be booking more than a couple weeks out. And probably, you know, more than a couple days out, honestly, at this point, right? Like, I did fly Spirit a couple weeks ago, but I booked it 90 minutes before departure.
Do you think it's a situation where they say, okay, look, we're gonna focus solely on Florida and abandon everything else?
I don't know what markets they might focus on in that way. I do think that Florida is definitely one of the key markets they are likely, just because Fort Lauderdale is their biggest operation still. It's also interesting that Frontier put out a release last week announcing a bunch of new routes, saying we are going to be the largest low-cost carrier in major markets, and we're going after the top 20 airports. And Spirit is in a lot of those airports. So, and oh, by the way, I believe it was Biffles, Frontier's CEO, their private jet showed up in Fort Lauderdale midweek before the bankruptcy filing came out. So, and they say they didn't talk about a merger or a buyout or anything like that. But, yeah. So I don't know what they were talking about. If it was like, hey, any suggestions? Yeah, good luck, buddy. I don't know. Like, what else do you talk about in that scenario? Legal, anyways.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I have my doubts that any of this works. And so, like, Florida makes some sense if they could just get back to focusing on Florida. But then I almost feel like it's too much to even.
And right, like, we talk about the, on, you know, interminable demand from between Florida and the Northeast. There's other markets as well, but A, that demand isn't truly bottomless, right? There are limits to it. B, the limits in many cases come about from, or like, are also exacerbated by competition. There's other people fighting for those markets. And maybe I mentioned this last week, like the idea of major airlines or legacy airlines offering basic economy now, they can sort of, they've gotten their systems and operations and product to a point that they can compete with that super low price. And it's much harder for the LCCs and ULCCs to compete for the premium passenger because, you know, back when it was just big front seat, it was easy to say like, yeah, I just want some more space. You buy it. It's at a decent price, whatever. Now, like, Spirit selling a quote unquote first class is a very different, it's a different type of market to go after, a different type of customer to go after. And it's not clear that they're going to have success there.
Yep. Oh man, I don't know.
So,
do you think how long? What's the timeline on this playing out? Maybe a month, 2 months?
Longer than that. It'll be, because it's not a prepackaged. It's going to be real interesting to see who sort of steps up and offers the cash.
Yep.
I also, their current balances, they actually have more assets than liabilities. They're not actually underwater yet, but they're burning cash. So.
Has anyone shown up?
I mean, it's all happened on Friday afternoon. We're recording this on Sunday and it's a holiday weekend. So I haven't seen anything.
Okay.
It'll play out over the next couple of weeks, I'm sure. Right. It's also one of those things like someone's going to show up with some cash. It's just a matter of, is it enough? And what are they going to, you know,
you sound fairly confident in that, but like, does anyone want Spirit or do they just want the assets?
Well, that's right. They might be showing up for the assets. And that goes back to the comment I made at the beginning. It was like, is this a chapter 22 or an 18? Right. We've already done 11. So is it a chapter 11 or does it become a chapter 7, which is liquidation? And it could. It very well could. There are certainly, you know, vultures circling. We've talked about, you know, is this an opportunity for United to get a hub at Fort Lauderdale? Is this an opportunity for Frontier to capture a whole lot of LCC traffic? It wasn't, you know, it was sharing before. Is it an opportunity for a Breeze or a Zool or some other new guys to get into the market more easily and better. There are a lot of different ways this could play out. Not a Zool, God, a Bello. Neilman on the brain. But yeah, right. There's a lot of different ways this could play out, but. And one of them is Spirit could shrink and stick around for a little while. It's hard for me to see them, you know, if they cut themselves in half to get to and only keep the quote unquote profitable routes, do those routes stay profitable? And then can they stabilize enough to grow back out of it? And historically, that has not happened. Doesn't mean it can't, but
no.
If you look at every other airline that's tried to sort of cut its way to profitability, little cuts sometimes maybe, but when you start really hacking things apart, you know, airlines work on networks and the network effect sort of collapses.
It's fascinating. You said United potentially opening a hub at Fort Lauderdale if this falls through. Spirit pretty much owns Terminal 4, right? Like that's their.
No, they share with JetBlue. JetBlue has overflowed into that side. It's also some of the international rivals are over there, if I remember correctly. They have a number of gates, and it's preferential access. It's not guaranteed gates. But preferential access, which is close enough. They've got a lot going on there, but it's not entirely them, and it's linked into the JetBlue, like C&D, I think.
Okay.
That'd be
an interesting way for this to play out as United takes over their gates at Terminal 4, which is arguably a nicer terminal than where United is right now.
Yeah, that could be. I don't know. I'm trying to see if someone had something written. Yeah, I don't see it. Anyway, there's something about some of the unencumbered stuff they had, and like, there's not a lot, but I think gates at Fort Lauderdale is one of the, and again, Fort Lauderdale is actually a tough one because they're not owned or leased gates, it's preferential access. The airport authorities were like, okay, well, anyone else can apply. Like, I don't know if they can actually transfer them, but.
Oh, I got you. Okay. Very interesting. Well, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Korean. Has a Boeing order?
They have an intent for a Boeing order.
Oh, the concept of a plan.
Yeah. No, we do this all the time. The letter of intent and then an MOU and then and then eventually go firm order. And it's a big one. It's 103 airplanes plus some spare engines. I think it's 25 787s, a bunch of MAX 10s and a bunch of 777Xs. So, you know, keeping in mind that the MAX 10 and the 777X don't really exist yet. They will. The 777X this past week moved on to the next, like, phase 2D, I think, of the certification testing. It's moving in the right direction, but it's taking its time. So, you know, it's all moving in the right direction, but, you know, it's always fun for me to read the press releases about these orders, especially lately. This one is a whole lot of, sounds very political to me.
Yeah.
To say that.
Like, get out of the tariffs, take these planes type thing.
Yeah. Very much so. So maybe it works. Good for them. They still also have 350s and 321s, NEOs. So they're not an entirely Boeing operation, but
I didn't realize they had 350s.
I think so.
Interesting.
I think I remember that from the release. Maybe only on order, but, Korean Air has, this is from the press release. Korean Air has a long history of fostering close ties between the two countries, beginning with the opening of its first cargo route, Seoul, Tokyo, Los Angeles in April 71, and its first passenger route, Seoul, Tokyo, Honolulu, Los Angeles in April 72. Oh. Blah, 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 blah.
Wow.
Yeah. They like, including mention of that sort of thing is always funny. 20 777Xs, 25 7810s, and 50 7310s, and 8 freighters. Ooh, exciting.
I mean, they do have some aging planes, right? And
yeah,
they'll pick up some stuff from the Asiana merger.
Yeah.
But I don't think it'll be enough to replace their 748s and A380s.
The 748s are on the way out for DOD, aren't they? Those are going to come to E4B replacements.
Are Koreans becoming that?
I'm pretty sure that's what happened. SNC bought them, Sierra Nevada, maybe.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Maybe not all of them, but bought a bunch of them. And those deliveries have started shifting. There are 380s, but those are gone. Yeah, but the release also specifically calls out 350s and 321neos. Yeah. And yeah. Also combining with Asiana. There's going to be a lot going on there. But yeah, it's a big order. It's interesting. I assume most of it will become firmed up at some point. They'll have another set of press releases. It'll be great. This was like also partly done because there was an event in the United States at a ceremony, blah, blah, blah.
Of course. What good is an order without a ceremony?
Yeah, unless it was like at a major, in economic event, not just a press conference. So
super interesting.
On the sidelines of a thing.
Yeah. On top of that, Qantas is adding some more planes to their order that they already have.
Yeah, so Qantas first A321 XLR is due imminently, supposed to enter service like this month, maybe. I think actually delivery flights happened last week and they're getting, kicking the tires and putting it through induction to get it ready for service.
Yeah.
They've announced that they're going to take 20 more of the planes. 16 of them will have lie flat seats on board. And seat back entertainment to serve longer routes, which is significant in that the original pair, most of the original order, are short haul.
Yeah, what's the range on the what would be the range if they put business class lie flat seats on them?
They say 8,700 kilometers.
Wow.
But we've also heard some the new ones aren't coming till 2028. We've heard some airlines say that they don't really have the range that they were advertised, but they're talking about Transcon service from Perth, which I thought was part of the original plan with the short haul ones, or the short haul configuration. Maybe they just get upgraded to have nicer product. Quote, it will enable to replace, it's got a longer range than the 3,000 more kilometers than the Boeing 737 it replaces, and will enable Qantas to launch direct flights to destinations across Southeast Asia and the Pacific Islands that are not currently viable.
Hmm.
Yeah, Sydney, Melbourne, Sydney, Perth are the original routes for the first two that are, don't have beds. You imagine you can probably get Perth up to India, and then out in, Perth, India, and Adelaide, Singapore are specifically mentioned in the release. So, good times.
Yeah, I mean, Sydney, Perth is 3,200 kilometers.
That one doesn't require the XLR. It can, you can do it on the regular plane. Right, it was regular 321neo, if I remember correctly. But there was something about they wanted the additional range to be able to stretch it further than that for some sort of nearby stuff, neighbor island, Pacific stuff that didn't need beds necessarily. And they did the XLR, not the LR, because the XLR, the additional fuel tank is integrated versus the LR, where it takes up one or two cargo bays, container positions.
Yeah.
And they needed the cargo capacity. They needed the bulk space for baggage and or actual, boxes and stuff to get belly cargo, especially on the Transcon routes back and forth to Perth.
It's interesting. I mean, because, you're right. They could do India from Perth. They could also do some interesting things into Southern Asia. Hanoi, I think, is within the range. So just interesting. Yeah, Hanoi's within the range. I mean, they could even do China technically from Perth. That's kind of wild.
Yeah.
Cool.
So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. It depends on where in China you're talking about. But yeah, Perth to Delhi is, 4,800 miles? So that's probably too far.
Yeah, I think it's a little too far.
But, 7,800 kilometers, they're saying 8,700, but you're pushing it. But you can definitely get Mumbai and the East Coast and the South. So
yeah, I mean, this is one of those things with the XLRs. When do we find out if they're actually underperforming? Who's going to say it?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because United, right, is going to take some of these in the future. They're also going to take the MAX 10.
Yeah, American's taking some.
Like, at what point do they say this is just not? I mean, there were issues with the 752s crossing the Atlantic, going too far and running into issues. If they actually have issues with the XLR, we could be back in that situation again.
Set up a hub and gander?
Hub and gander, or I don't know, Bangor, Maine, refueling station. Just everybody set up to start refueling planes.
They don't like doing it in the U.S. because technically you're supposed to clear immigration at your first point of entry.
But what I'm talking about even going eastbound for some.
Well, I don't think eastbound's going to be a problem. I know we saw that one stop, but I don't think that's really an issue.
Okay. And then Brussels Airlines is getting a 320neo boost.
Yeah, they're getting five. Oop, that's definitely the wrong airport code. Sorry. I was looking at some China stuff on these. Yeah, they could actually get all the way up to Beijing from Perth.
Yeah.
No, sorry, not only Beijing. That's a little too far.
Shanghai, at least.
Shanghai, probably.
Yeah.
Brussels Airlines is adding 5 320neos from 2028, I think. 4 for replacement and 1 for growth. Just, you know, that's a pretty basic 2027, sorry, it's a pretty basic replacement sort of deal, but you know, since they're part of the Lufthansa group, right? So good to see some of that allocation coming together.
Yeah, it is weird to look at the Lufthansa group and like the consolidation that's happening of aircraft types, because it used to be like Brussels Airlines was like the 330 carrier.
Yeah.
You know, and that's all they had, plus some 320s. But it's funny, like they're all going to fly the exact same planes at some point, I bet. So
does Brussels Airlines not still fly the 330s? They do.
They still do. Yeah.
That's their long haul fleet all down into Africa and then the US.
Yep. That's all they have. But I think that's changing. We don't know for sure, right? Because Lufthansa never announced who was getting what out of the order that they placed. So, I mean, we have an idea, I think, but
yeah,
I think they're going to get 330neos, I think.
Yeah.
And then I saw a video, and it made me start doing some digging. Someone was showing, they were like, oh, taking Alpha out of Burbank, look at the new terminal. And I was like, new terminal? What are you talking about? And then they're like, oh, there's the old terminal. I was like, there's the old terminal. And so I started looking it up, and sure enough, Burbank Airport is getting a new terminal.
Yeah.
Did you know about this?
Yeah.
We never talked about it on the show.
All right. Sorry.
I mean, you're really dropping the ball.
You know, I guess I didn't think it was important.
I mean, I think it's important because one of the things about Burbank Airport today is that the terminal is fairly easy. Like you can just walk in, and I would actually recommend this 30 minutes before your flight.
Yeah.
And you'll make it, and you don't have to, it's not a comfortable terminal, but it's easy.
Yeah. I remember the two times I've flown out of it, I remember like very low ceilings. One of them, I think the Southwest time I flew was a long walk down a hallway. We did it on a Velo 4 years ago. Probably 4 years ago now, after Dorkfest, we went up and did wine tasting. So that one was kind of okay, but again, it was a small cramped space, like passengers coming in and out through the same area, and there was nowhere for anybody to sit and move. It was tough. My recollection of the debate about it was basically, and it's, you know, too bad Foss isn't here this week to keep that same concept up of like, I just want a small airport that I can walk straight to my gate versus I need an airport big enough to actually handle the operations it's dealing with.
And I think that, I mean, I still think it's a challenge for Burbank. Like handling the operations, yeah, there's a lot of people, but it's a small, I mean, it's essentially a single runway when you think about it. I mean, they can use the cross runway, but it's not frequently used. So the convenience factor is really the selling point. I have friends that live in North Hollywood and they love Burbank, like even though the gate area is terrible. So they love it because they could get the JetBlue Transcon out of there. Yeah, the new terminal, I mean, it looks nice. It's going to be on the north side of the 26 runway. So it's on the current terminal is on the southeast side of the airport, and it's right next to basically the metro station and the rental car center and the Marriott. And the new terminal is not close to the metro station. So I don't know how that's going to work. I don't know how many people use that metro station for the airport, but it is convenient because it's, you cross the street and you're at the terminal basically. So that will be an interesting turn.
Yeah.
But it looks like a nice terminal, what they're building. It looks open and airy, and to Foz's point, doesn't look like it'll be 5 minutes to get from the, you know, car to your gate, unfortunately. So
yeah.
And then lastly, I want to talk about Southwest to St. Martin.
Yeah, why not?
So what's the story here? Is this happening?
First new international route since then, like 4 years. Yeah, they're gonna fly from Orlando.
Wow.
Daily from Orlando and Saturday, Sunday from BWI. And I was surprised. I thought Frontier was running the Orlando route, and I don't think they are. So some people, I think that route has operated in the past, but not in a long time. So, you know, we'll see what the demand is. Obviously, one has to assume they are planning some connection flow there. And because it's going from Florida instead of from New York or Boston, which I'm used to the JetBlue connections, which are terrible, it will be... I think they got a better chance of, you know, they can leave a little later in the morning so they can get the first bank and maybe even a second bank of flights in before they have to go down and get the turn and come back. Also, operationally, they can have a set of pilots do the turn instead of one go down and get, you know, be stuck there because they don't have enough hours to fly back.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's great for the pilots, but.
if you want the vacation, if you want the, you know, an overnight in St. Martin.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that they chose St. Martin. I mean, kind of, I guess. It just doesn't seem like, it doesn't seem like St. Martin has been at the top of people's destination list recently, but maybe I'm, maybe I just don't know the Caribbean very well.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it's cool. I mean, I know we have a friend that will, I will fly this route and we'll love it because we'll get this plane spot. So
yeah, I mean, I think that's, I like plane spotting there.
I mean, I do too. I just, I have, he, for him, it's great because he can non-rev down there.
Yeah.
So, fair. Yeah. Anything else?
I think that's it.
We got a bunch to talk about in the bonus topics for Patreon subscribers. We're going to talk about Lufthansa and some deliveries, Alaska and some 787s, JetBlue, Condor partnership, weather modification in Florida. Didn't see that coming. Finnair's summer 2026 expansion and Edelweiss's A350 short hops that they're doing. So stick around for that if you're a Patreon subscriber. If you're not, thanks for listening. We will talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.